Hey everyone, and welcome back to the Below the Rim podcast. As always, I'm your host, Jacob Lieb, joined by the rest of my starting five here, and Alex, Brian, Ian, and Michael. Fellas, how were the holidays?
Pretty good. I actually had a monumental moment. I put sports on in my in-laws' house for the first time ever.
How'd that go?
And they're not a sports family, but it went extremely well. And what they do care about is sports media conglomerates. And so we had a long conversation about various TV deals, talked a lot about the Chicago Sports Network. We talked a lot about Warner Discovery losing the rights to the NBA. So
yes,
that really got us through. That was a fun time. And I look forward to many more discussions about sports media in the future and being able to watch games there.
Does that mean we have a future investor in the Below the Rim Media network there in the in-laws? Is that what
you're saying? I suppose that's possible. I should float it.
That's probably the next thing to bring up.
Yeah, can't hurt to do it early.
I realized, well, yeah, I love that actually. I actually forgot about the Warner situation, so that was news. That's great. Well, it's not great for them.
Not great for them.
Also, I realized, so I'm switching locations, I don't have any self-control with food. I used to think I was, like, good about that. Really bad. I actually ate too much to where I didn't feel good for, like, 2 hours. So that was the situation.
That's what I do nightly. So, well, welcome.
Oh, my God. I got to work on that. And I may come to you psychologically later for that. But that was something I learned negative about myself. Other than that, great health.
You're lucky you have self-control over anything. I just have no self-control, period. So food, gambling, alcohol, you know, it's just smorgasbord of overindulging. So, you know, that's why we go cold turkey, right? We have the turkey and then we go cold turkey. It's a really healthy lifestyle.
Speaking of cold turkey, I like it better the day after. Cold.
Really?
It's funny. You don't teach that transition in school, folks.
It's funny you mentioned that because I agree.
Today, Alex?
I mean, well, Brian, you're a cold guy too, right? Like, temperature doesn't matter with the food, and I feel like day after, there's something special about it.
No, there was something with the turkey this year. Like, if you asked me this a week ago, I wouldn't have had anything to say. But day after, Uncle makes the turkey, did a little different this year. He, like, let it sit in the juices longer or something. So when I took leftovers, there was a little bit of the juices, and it just, like, sat in it for a little longer. Next day, it was definitely better. Like, it was juicier. It was in my mouth, and it was great. So I second that.
Does anybody fry turkey? And Brian, I enjoyed that. Thank you for that. Well, did anyone – I hear frying turkeys is, like, the best taste, but it's, like, super dangerous to make.
My family's been doing that for a while. We do it in the backyard.
Yeah.
It's pretty good.
Actually?
Yeah, wow. Yeah, we've got like a huge, it looks like a crawdad boiler, essentially, but it's filled with oil with a gas propane, like a propane hookup to it. It's very good, but I don't think my homeowner's insurance would be high enough for me to do that by myself.
That's amazing.
Have we had any emergency room trips, or have we gotten out?
No, it's a two-man job, very careful, fire extinguisher nearby.
One basketball thing that I want to mention is that I just realized that the NBA keeps track of dunk scores, which was news to me. Like, when anyone dunks the ball in an NBA game, the NBA will put a score on it that's like a combination of, like, how high the person jumped, how powerful it was, how fast they're moving through the air, like, all these crazy, like, advanced statistics. So I just found that out, and at some point we should dive into that because that gets me all hot and bothered.
That's interesting.
Well, how do you measure powerful dunks? I mean, literally the speed from the hand to the rim?
I guess. I don't know.
Or how high?
But
wow.
Something to dig into. Like,
little,
that was
that's a
really
little
intriguing.
Homework assignment for you, Brian. Come back with a full, you know, formulaic breakdown of the dunk score so we can really understand what a good dunk looks like.
I could do that because I almost pivoted from defense to that because I was so intrigued. So
absolutely
I'll do
not.
That for next week.
Speaking of dunking, does anyone dunk their turkey in any dressings or sauces?
Such a good transition.
Sorry, Alex. I'm trying to be like you today.
No, that was
y'all are coming from my job. I'm feeling the hot seat here a little bit. It's getting a little bit warm.
I'm a cranberry guy. Straight out the can. Nothing special.
I'm not dunking anything, but I'll slather it.
So, to bring it full circle, I don't dunk anything, but the next day, I do love a turkey cranberry sandwich. Put those two things together.
Yeah.
You know, nice toasted piece of bread and just, you know, chomp right into that. That's a real nice leftovers meal.
Ian, I don't necessarily... now I just got Brian slapped in the word dressing. I don't actually dress it up. I combine everything. So it's like...
Thank you, Alex.
With the stuffing, with the turkey, with all of it kind of combined in one. So not necessarily a dressing, but more, you get all the juices in one one big bite.
Quick show of hands. Anybody a mac and cheese Thanksgiving family?
We are. Big.
Okay.
It was a big disappointment this year as well. It's a little bit of a family drama. The mac and cheese got assigned to the next generation, right, of attendees, and you know, I don't want to be a little rude, but she shit the bed. She really
Was it you?
Just shout out Ivana, cousin Ivana. Just really, she got some shots up and was 0-for-12 from the field. It was one of those where, you know, the effort was there, just didn't the outcome wasn't what was expected.
We just lost a subscriber.
We appreciate your service, Ivana.
Is right, Ivana a different person, or Ivana. Is that what you go by?
Yeah, that's my alter ego. Ivana the Iguana, that's me.
Sorry, I had to.
On that note, let's hop into it. So, got some fun topics here today. You're going to continue to keep it fresh. Want to start talking a little bit about Jokic. You know, I think there's a lot of praise and accolades that we could share, but want to zoom out a little big picture and talk about the trajectory of his career and, you know, have some lively conversation about where we think he could end up in the pantheon of fame. Then let's talk about 2017 through 2019. I think we're at the place now where those were three really interesting drafts, and, you know, actually draft talk is already coming up with some potential game-changing prospects in the college ranks this year. And I think it's always fun to go back and take a peek at those drafts. And then going to do a little courtroom drama. Who doesn't love a little prosecutor defense action? Flip it on its head and talk about some of our least favorite players and make a case for why they may or may not actually be detrimental to their team's performance. So we'll go through those three, and then I know we have, some really passionate folks to take us home with some unique topics here, keeping it fresh. So with that, you know, I thought maybe I would start, guys, just giving a little context on Jokic statistically of you know, where he's at this year and what that looks like. So through 15 games this year, he's averaging 29.6 points, 13.2 rebounds, and 10.7 assists. Obviously, insane raw numbers. Even more mind-blowing, that's on 50.8% shooting from three, which kind of doesn't even make sense. He's got a win share of 3.5 wins already this year, standalone. Context, right, he has 115.1 total win share for his career, so he's effectively responsible standalone for over three wins already for the Nuggets, which... The contributions are nuts, right? It's, you know, we could make the argument, is it sustainable, is it not? I thought it was helpful context. He's career 10-7 on 55.8% from the field and 33.5% from three, and he's had to do it, right? The Nuggets team has kind of dictated that his performance has to kind of scale up from here. So I guess, A, where and what do we think the rest of this season and then extrapolating from that, his career looks like, and where do we think that will have him land in the all-time list of great players? I think we're at the point of his performance where we should start talking about where he falls in terms of the all-time great. So, kind of start the context and open it up from there.
Uh, We're all just speechless.
I know, it's a little
crazy. Good.
I think the I do a lot of my judging a basketball player on the eye test, and he passes literally every possible eye test you could pass. He makes every single player on his team better. I don't think that. Well, I do like Aaron Gordon, Murray, but I think that they've benefited massively. His whole team has. Jacob, as you said, he got 3 wins already just based on like himself. He's a point guard that is now shooting threes and is like, is he 7 feet tall? I forget if he's 6'11" or how big he is. But I don't think I've ever seen anybody play like him. He's like Magic Johnson in a center's body that also trains horses on the side. It's just a unique combination.
So I just quickly on that, because I think it's a great transition. Just for context, Magic on his career, right, was 19.5, 7.2, and 11.2 on 52% from the field. So like, doesn't even sniff those numbers. Magic's best, and obviously context, right, in terms of the time of basketball. You know, obviously that is going to be a very different flow and speed. So need to take that in consideration, but. Magic also won 3 MVPs, and his best season was 86-87 when they won the championship, 23-12-6, and he was the MVP and champion that year. So, I don't know, like, just the counting stats, already to this date, is it fair to say that as just a statistical performer that Jokic is better than Magic? Is he in that conversation already, or what else do we need to see to start putting him in that conversation?
Well, yeah, I think a big part of that discussion is how long you're able to maintain those statistics over your career, because Jokic's window has been a bit smaller than Magic at this point. But his game does lend itself to him just doing this until he wants to retire to the horses, because he doesn't jump. He's not injury prone. So I think he can keep it up, and I think he's got a long career full of the statistics. But if the discussion around ranking players is just based on their prime, it's a different discussion versus maintaining those statistics throughout a career.
I think it has to be over a career, personally. If we're talking best of all time. But Brian, I cut you off.
No, I was going to say, I think it's both. I mean, that's like the classic LeBron versus MJ. Like, you need longevity, but like the peak also matters. I think what makes Jokic such an interesting, like, comparison as far as where you put them in the Mount Rushmore is there just aren't many guys who have played exactly like him, like at that size, not necessarily being a rim protector, but being arguably one of the best facilitators of an offense I've ever seen. I mean that in like every single like facet of that word. Like, just watching, like you're mentioning the eye test, Michael, like I don't think anyone in the current NBA at least makes more out of less than Jokic. And I swear, whatever he's putting on his hands, whatever lotion he's using, I want to use, because he's got the softest hands I've ever seen.
Jergens.
Like literally, like the Jokic floater where he just like gets the ball in the paint kind of centered up to the hoop, and like he'll throw the floater up, and it'll just, like the way it bounces on the rim, it's like, I don't even know how he gets it that soft on the rim, but, like, and, like, you know, not to jump ahead, but in some of the defensive stats that I look at, like, just, like, he's not that rim protector per se, but his hands on defense, and you can look at the stats, you can watch the game, but he's everywhere, like steals, deflections, like, so he's great on both sides of the court. He has the MVPs to back it up. Like, I think it's a shoe-in that he's one of the best of all time. I think the way he plays makes him hard to compare one-to-one to a lot of these guys. Like, you compare him to like a Wilt Chamberlain or like a Bill Russell or a Michael Jordan, who are in more traditional roles, I guess. But he's definitely up there, and if he keeps this up for a couple more years, wins MVP this year, like, I mean, he's got to be right up there in the top 10 or so.
And Brian, to your point about the lack of jumping, and he also, Jokic himself makes jokes about it. I think he's an underrated athlete, though. Some of these moves where he does his spin moves on these amazing big men, like I saw him do a spin move against Rudy Gobert that I'm like, that was one of the quickest spin moves where he switched the ball from right to the left, went the finger roll layup after the, again, a really quick spin move. And you can't do all these things if you're not crazy athletic in that body. And he's so big, too. I also think his intellect for the game is bar none. Like, LeBron, Rajon Rondo, Chris Paul level. Like, he is, knows where everyone is, knows where they want to be, knows where he wants to be. He knows the game. He's playing chess. A lot of players are playing checkers.
Yeah, I completely agree, right? I don't think anybody's going to oppose it, you know, a stance on greatest of all time and where he falls into that. I think the point that I would hit on, right, is kind of twofold, right? He is playing the way he needs to for them to win, which I think is the double click into Brian and Michael a little bit of what you were saying, right? Which is, he can play all the different kind of positions, right? But it also can assert himself on the game when he needs to. I think this year is a perfect example, right? He's 14 shots a game sort of guy for his career. He's up to 20 this year. I think the volume of three-pointers is up from kind of somewhere in the low twos to the mid-fours, right, in terms of having to score at volume and know that from a need to score at volume, it has to happen from the perimeter, not just on the inside. I think all of those things are why he's heads and shoulders right now the best player in the NBA, right? I think he has been for the past probably 5 years in a tier of his own, and everybody, as much as we like to talk about Giannis and SGA and Luka and Ant is the next, right? I think they're all in a separate tier right now just because of the flexibility and kind of Jokic truly never needing help and support. He can do it on its own, he can do it with teammates. I think the hardest case for him, and really what will be probably this entire next generation of players, is there are just so many damn good basketball players now. So even someone like him who can single-handedly, you know, pull a team to the playoffs, he's probably going to be 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th seed in the West, right? Like, you know, this is a potential play-in team this year. And I think if you drop, I'm not going to say him, but that level of performer on a team in the early, definitely in the early 2000s, probably in the 90s, 80s and 70s, 80s a little, but definitely 70s and 60s as well, they're a top four seed in their conference, right? And you have home court advantage, and you're going to have playoff accolades that go with that regular season performance. And I think we're such a, you know, results-oriented consumer at this point, I get concerned that you put up Tim Duncan's profile and Jokic's profile, right? And five championships, right? And I think it's, you know, three finals MVPs, right, for Duncan. You know, it's going to be hard. Even though I think if you put them side by side and watch the film, I'm confident today that I would make an argument that Jokic is a better basketball player than Tim Duncan.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a hard, like, you know, line to walk. But when you get up to that top 10 of all time, which is kind of what we're talking about, right? I do, like, you, like, you know, as the famous line goes, you play to win the game. So it's like, and I won't do it in character, maybe later, but I do think that's fair to do that. Like, I think if you look at some of those Spurs, I mean, granted, there's coaching, there's a lot of different things. It's not like he's working with absolutely nothing. This team isn't as good as it's been in the past. He has won a championship. If he doesn't win another championship, I think that's a fair reason to hold him back from putting him up a couple more spots when you're talking about that caliber of player. Because at the end of the day, you know, it's never going to be exactly even. It's never going to be exactly fair. But I think that will be the dialogue, and I think I'm generally supportive of that.
I was going to say...
You go ahead.
No, Alex. I'd like to hear your voice.
It's a funny balance because... like you said, Brian, we're going to end up holding him back because of a lack of championships, but he's also, he's got to be one of the only MVPs who's never played with an all-star. Or I guess he is right now with Westbrook, but that doesn't really count. He hasn't played with an all-star. And he's going to end up winning less championships. But he's also one of the only stars who isn't willing or interested in asking out to go to a better situation. So it's like that weird balance of we want guys to be loyal to their franchises. We don't like when guys ask out, but we're going to hold it against you when you don't win a bunch of championships.
He's got to recruit in. He's got to recruit in.
But he's not going to do that. And I would even take it to the next step, Alex. Aaron Gordon was a bust in a lot of people's eye before going and playing with Jokic, right? Like, yes, he has transformed the style of his game, but what he was expected to be in Orlando and the actual results, rough going, right? I'm fairly confident that Michael Porter Jr. would not have gotten paid if he was on another team. His game is very dependent on the space that Jokic and looks that Jokic can create for him, right? And I think we've seen time and time again that when Jokic is on the floor, or when Jamal Murray, Team Canada is a perfect example, right? Or Jokic isn't playing for the Nuggets, they struggle. And it's not like Jamal Murray is able to buoy a lot of that performance, right, across the board. So I wonder if we'll have some sort of metric to contextualize kind of wins above expectation with the totality of that performance, right? And I think that's what, like, Windshare and Per try and do. But just in terms of, like, I wonder how many sheer playoff seeds difference Jokic delivers to the Nuggets every year, right? Like, measure them by saying they would be the 13 seed in the West this year if they don't have him, and they're going to probably end up as the 7 or 8, right? Like, that's dramatically different from the totality of, you know, where they would be without him. And I just, this is me who's always going to be like, well, yeah, you know, if you don't win in the playoffs when it counts, right? For me, that's still the barometer of, you know, success. I just think that's hard when there's somebody that's sheer, like, so clearly heads and shoulders better than everybody else. And he's going to get penalized for these next 2 to 4 years where they just don't have the bodies around him. And they can't. They're capped out in a lot of ways, and they've decided they're investing in the youth. And I think it's a really hard one.
So jumping in on that, because I was going to bring up the same point as Alex, right? Like, he's kind of like the least drama superstar that we have. Because of that, we never really get the conversation of, like, who would be the ideal all-star to pair with Jokic? Because he's not out there. He's not recruiting. He's not getting on the phone. He's not on the USA basketball team. He's not on the Canadian basketball team. So he's not really in the ears of a lot of these guys, at least in a public way, that some of these other superstars are we've had over the years, Curry, Kevin Durant, etc. So in a realistic sense, like, who would be the perfect guy to pair with Jokic for the next 6+ years to deliver them more titles and, like, get Jokic cemented up in that upper echelon?
Also, if you were building your ultimate team, like, of all time, in all decades, I guarantee you, I think we would all pick Jokic in the top five. I think there's Michael, LeBron, Kobe, like, a lot of these guys that who are historically amazing. I think Jokic, starting from scratch, you want to build a team around Jokic. So I think that's more of an individual compared to the team, which I do also think, though, you have to – all the best guys have won 4, 5, 6 Bill Russell 11 championships. So, and that's not necessarily in his control, I think, completely. I think, you know, Michael and Kobe and Shaq, all these guys, and the Spurs, they were the original big three. There's always a bunch of guys that go along with them. And, Jacob, to your point, the Nuggets don't have – anyone who's even a big two. I would not classify any of the guys on that team to be a big two. There are a lot of good complementary pieces.
Yeah. And speaking of those, and Ian, I think for me it's probably SGA would be the guy. And he's not going anywhere too, because my take is, like, from a skill set perspective, you do want somebody who's a secondary creator, right, that can buoy the team when Jokic is off the floor. No drop off from a defense perspective, but also can play off the ball, primarily in terms of, like, the right type of movement. And I think with his improved, or at least willingness to shoot, right, corner threes, wing threes, etc., plus that pick and roll would just be just the nastiest thing seen in, you know, like, and that's obviously if I could choose any other superstar. if I had to, like, actually think about it from, you know, a guy like Jalen Johnson, I think could be, like, super fun next to him. I think, like, a guy then could, you know, end up being an all-star in that type of role. I think, you know, even guys like as low as, like, Devin Vassell or, you know, that type of body, right? A little bit more of a creator versus just a catch-and-shoot guy can put the ball on the floor and go get his own. I think even those types of guys would take them and elevate their play significantly versus the bodies that they have on the floor right now. You know, like the Alex Rasky prototype.
Yeah, I appreciate that. If I'm being greedy, I'd probably go with Steph Curry because for my eyes, that would just be like the most entertaining thing to watch, but not possible.
What if Steph goes ring chasing?
See, he's the other guy. Like, he's the other guy who's extremely loyal and doesn't ask for much, and we love him for it.
We do love him for it. That I would agree with. So, here's some names. Tell me when to stop.
Wait, which way are you going? One down?
I'm going to start with greatest of all time. Tell me when to stop in terms of we should think about including, not today, but where Jokic could potentially land. Right? So by the end of his career, we think he could potentially be higher than that person. MJ. LeBron. Kareem. Bill Russell. Magic.
Stop. I'll fully say, though, I don't know anything about these guys. I couldn't tell you what era they played in. I couldn't tell you what team they played for. I couldn't tell you what position they played.
Have you even heard these names before?
Pre-1995, not a clue.
Okay, so but, just to be clear. Right?
But I was waiting for Magic. I was waiting for Magic because I do know a lot about Magic. So
that would mean he would leapfrog guys like... Duncan, Kobe, Steph, and Shaq, and KD, are probably the other contemporaries that we think he could potentially leapfrog in terms of all.
I think he's miles ahead of Kevin Durant. But, I think him and Duncan are pretty, like, comparable in terms of, like, counting stats, eye test, all that stuff. The difference is going to be titles, but I think Jokic is such a complete player, particularly on the offensive end, that I could see him moving into that Magic zone. But I don't know what I'm talking about, so I'll let the guys who actually know their history chime in here.
It all depends on championships. Like, if he gets to 4, he's top 5. If he's 3, 6, 7, 8, it's hard to it's just his offense is so, it's like unlike anything we've ever seen, and I actually think Wemby kind of has a chance to eventually get there. I'd like to see the progression. But they're kind of similar in their alien-esque ways. But I think he could be a 5-8 and possibly higher, depending if he goes, maybe he wins the next 4 championships. Who knows, but probably not.
It's hard for me to project what's going to happen, but right now I have him sitting in the room with Giannis, Hakeem, slightly below Shaq, Kobe, Duncan, but like that's where I have him in that range.
I think I agree. I think to your point, project, right, Michael. You know, I think we can agree. If he gets 2 more championships, all of a sudden it's a very different conversation. Cool. Well, a lot of the reason the Nuggets are in this place is because they've really shat the bed when it comes to drafting, and really haven't found the right bodies to complement Jokic in the way and develop that talent. So, you know, I thought it would be really interesting to harken back to some recent drafts, really focus on the 2017, 18, and 19 seasons, because I think we have enough kind of proof in the pudding, right, of, you know, for lack of a better word, these guys are sort of telling us who they are and what they're doing. I thought it'd be fun to do a little bit of a redraft. So what I'll do is I'll go through for – we'll do each one. We'll redraft the top five and then maybe talk about where these guys fit in the totem pole across all 3 years. And just go in reverse – or in chronological order. So we'll start with 2017 and work our way to 2019. So 2017, the actual order was Markel Fultz, Lonzo Ball, Jason Tatum, Mr. KU, Josh Jackson, and who I, by the way, I thought was going to be an awesome NBA player. He was my favorite out of that draft. And De'Aaron Fox. So, you know, some other guys that we could consider. Donovan Mitchell went 13th overall. Bam went 14th. Jaren Allen went 22nd. OG Anunoby 23rd. Derek White 29. Josh Hart 30. And then I even included Isaiah Hartenstein in there at 43.
Just one more. Laurie Markkanen was in there at 7.
Oh, Laurie at 7, yeah. Good call. My fault. And then, so, you know, want to kind of open it. Who wants to take a stab at how they would think about the reverse draft order?
I just want to say one thing, that it's incredible looking at these drafts and seeing how many just absolute swing and misses there are for teams and organization and businesses that make cumulatively like billions of dollars and see them just like miss on like half of these picks at least, and they have all the information. They're talking to these guys like second cousins and like uncles and like middle school coaches, and they can't get it right. It's fucking ridiculous. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I think you're right. The 2017 one was the one that was mind-blowing to me. There was so much than the 2017.
It's also hard. It's also like how unpredictable human behavior is, which I think is interesting, but we can proceed with the draft.
You know, I think two things. One, can we establish what the criteria is? Like, are we redrafting for the next decade, this season,
or
next
what
season?
Done already.
What's the criteria?
Fair question.
I think let's say this in the next five seasons. I think all of these guys have enough runway that pseudo continue for the next five seasons. So,
yeah,
so we're not starting a franchise, but you're running out the rest
the
of
the short to medium term.
Yeah, okay. So the players they are.
Also, I feel like if just blind, if someone asked me, you know, what I thought the best draft class was of the last 10 years, I would immediately say 2018. But then doing this exercise and, like, looking through it, I feel like 17 might have surpassed 18. Maybe not in terms of depth.
I don't
But
think so.
At the top, I think it's just as strong as 18.
I disagree.
So it's pretty fun.
We can all agree that 2019 was the worst. So, you know, there's that.
Of these, for sure.
Okay. So, you're saying 17? The top of 17 is the same as the top of 18?
Yeah, I think I agree with you. But Alex, what would, if you were redrafting today for 2017, what would be your order?
I would for sure start with Jason Tatum at number one. Donovan Mitchell at two.
Are we all going around? Oh, sorry. Are we all going around the horn with our top five?
I figured we'd let Alex go, and we could see if we got consensus quickly, or if there's any disagreement, and we can go from there.
I'd go Tatum, Mitchell, and then I'd go Bam, and then I think I'd probably go Derek White at four, De'Aaron Fox at five, and then Laurie Markkanen, and that's probably where I'd cap it.
Wow.
Wait, so say it one more time. Give us your top five.
Tatum, Donovan Mitchell, Bam at three, and then I go Derek White at four, De'Aaron Fox at five, and then Laurie Markkanen.
That was my same top six. I couldn't decide on the order, Alex, and I had Derek White actually at six, but I know he's such a winning basketball player. He does so many intangibles. And I had De'Aaron Fox at four and Lowry at five, but I could be swayed to have Derek White. I just think De'Aaron Fox, the whole clutch points, and he's such a spark plug, and he's such a great scorer. But I think a more complete player may be Derek White. So I can't disagree with you on that.
He's a tough one to judge in the Celtics system.
Yes.
I think you stick to your guns, Michael. I think Fox is for sure ahead of White besides that on Fountain.
Yeah, I agree. Fox dragged Sacramento from the depths of hell, like, into something that's really impressive. So, yeah, I would go Fox over White for sure.
And where do you put Laurie?
I got Laurie right after him. So that's same same order as you, Alex, except I switched Fox and White.
Got it. And then I'd slide Laurie. Yeah, what you said, Brian. I'd slide Hartenstein. I'd put him at 7, but he's 6 or 7. I'm happy with him. He's been really good.
I think Laurie's a very interesting one. To be honest, I kind of wish we get to see him outside of the Jazz. They just continue, like, we get 2/3 through the year, he's too good, and they shut him down. Right? And, like, I think
that's the whole point.
I think he's a winning basketball player. I think we've consensus, right? Tatum and Donovan Mitchell. I actually also would go De'Aaron Fox at 3. I think he still has the upside that, you know, is a kind of bucket gutter that none of the other guys have. You know, I'm going to be the one that says Bam's overrated. I know he is a really, really good defensive cog, right? I get that. His offensive game leaves a ton to be desired. He cannot shoot past 18 feet. His finishing around the rim is, I wouldn't say world class. I don't think he has creativity. Sure, defensive rebounding, offensive rebounding, good. I'm inclined to actually have him fall out of the top 5. And I would actually kind of slide up Derek White, Laurie, and then Bam into my 6th spot. I think he had one really great year when they made the finals run, and kind of I haven't seen him repeat that performance.
He's a defensive what?
Cog.
Oh, cog.
Yeah. All right.
I think I said right.
COG.
Yes,
I had no idea what you said, but all right, definitely not that. Watch it your works.
Mouth.
It works.
Watch your mouth.
He did
head on it. I got a son.
I'm gonna tell your mother.
After the bubble run, I agree, Jacob. It was like the trajectory and the ceiling was extremely high. I remember having conversations with some of you guys about his ceiling being like, if he could improve his game to like a Kevin Garnett level. Like, that was what we were looking at, and he hasn't even come close to that.
I got to come to the defense of Bam a little bit. I think he is obviously elite defensively. I think he distributes the ball much better than your average big. He has added the three-point shot to his game, which isn't good, but he's taking it. There's a lot of room to improve. I think his, again, from a free throw shooting perspective, percentages might be down this year. If you look at his career, an above-average free-throw shooter who could easily develop the three-pointer into his game, he's still young enough where there's plenty of upside. He's still an all-star caliber player, albeit maybe borderline at this point, but there's still plenty of runway. He's still a very good player. Bam's the type of player who could fit on pretty much any team. Like, he's a very valuable piece, and I think he's a winning player, and I don't like having Laurie ahead of him. I think is an absolute crime. Like, Laurie is like the 4th or 5th best player on a good team.
Yeah, put him on trial. That's a criminal act.
Yeah, easy. I said I wasn't doing it. I'm doing
Power's already going to your head.
Brian, I agree wholeheartedly though with the Bam fits on any single team, just like a Derek White. He would make any team that he is on better than they were without him.
I
don't want to just like say that that's true. I don't actually think his offensive game fits on every team. Like, I don't think you can drop him in a up-tempo, more fast-paced type system, and Bam's going to all of a sudden be kind of a stretch 5, run the floor, you know, rim run. Like I don't think Bam succeeds. I don't think Bam succeeds on Celtics. I don't think he would succeed on the Mavericks system. Like, I think just by saying, like, put Bam in and he's... I don't think he has the offensive skill set to do so.
I mean, he's not a worse offensive player than, like, a Derek Lively or Daniel Gafford.
He doesn't play above the rim as well as Derek Lively or
But he still does, though.
He can play
both. He's still
I'm not saying
athlete,
he can't dunk. He's what, 6'11"? Derek Lively's what, 7'1" and gets up. Like, I feel like there's, I don't know. I'm out on Bam. I also think he is what he is. I don't think you're getting any additional upset.
That's not true. You're not listening to anything I'm saying.
We got to give him props for the switchability too. He's a great rim protector, but he could also switch onto guards, which is not something that all big men could do.
He's a defensive player of the year type player who is also a good offensive option when you look at him holistically, who has added skills to his game as of very recently. Like, he is like leaps and bounds. Like, who here would take Lauri Markkanen over Bam? Like, you'd have to be insane. Like, in any context, in my opinion.
And I do think, Jacob, he can make alley-oops. He can hustle. He's quick. He'd be fine to cut. I think you're rating him worse on the offensive end than I think all of us are.
I think that's fair.
I think we also have to remind ourselves where we started this episode talking about Jokic. Like, Bam guard Jokic better than pretty much anybody else in the league, so I think that there's something for that. The switchability is like super important. Like, last year Bam guarded Jokic and Giannis a ton, like, in those matchups, and that's like two of the best offensive players that we have in the league. And so being able to do both those things, guard two very different but extremely highly skilled offensive players, is, I don't know, a lot of teams would kill for that.
That's fair. All right.
And quickly, Jacob, before we move on, I really want to get a couple other guys that I like. We agree on the top six. Lonzo Ball is just sad. It's just a sad situation. I love that guy. He's an amazing
player.
Same
with Markel Fultz. Both are very sad situations.
That's true.
Same with Justin Patton.
Yeah. Some of the other guys in that draft I like that I think are strong. Malik Monk. My boy Luke Kennard, that I think people forget about, but he's an unreal three-point shooter. John Collins, pretty solid. Jared Allen, I mean, he's a great defensive big. OG Anunoby, Josh Hart. I'll include Dylan Brooks. I don't like him, but he can.
We don't utter his name on this podcast.
I can take that. You can edit that out. But it's a lot of great players throughout the entire draft. Just wanted to hit those.
It's a good draft.
I think
it's a good draft.
Definitely a deep draft. I think if we go to 2018, we'll see a lot of the top end talent to nowhere near as much depth. So, quick reminder: we went 8-1, yeeks. Bagley 2, double yeeks. Then, in a trade, Trae Young 3, Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr. 4, and Luka 5. Obviously, off the bat, the fact that Luka went 5th in that draft, I think, Brian, you said it up front. It's like, what the heck were these scouts watching? It's just like, what were we doing out here? Just truly hard to fathom. Some other names in there, not a ton. SGA went 11. Michael Porter Jr. went 14th. Anthony Simons went 24. And, Stevenson's own Jalen Brunson, first pick up there, or third pick of the second round there at 33. So, I'll maybe we start with Ian, if you want to give us your proposed order here so we can pick it apart and go through the 2018 redraft.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the top two are pretty non-negotiable with Luka and SGA, 1-2. I also personally believe that 3 is non-negotiable. Jalen Brunson, Stevenson, Patriot legend, Villanova legend, current New York Knicks legend. That's the top 3. Number 4, I'm going Trae Young. I know we have Trae Young haters. And number 5, I'm going Jaren Jackson Jr. I think you can make the argument for Jaren Jackson Jr. over Trae Young. I think availability can be the best ability, and Jaren Jackson Jr. just might not have that in him. But when he's on the court, he's probably above Trae for me.
That was my exact order.
Yeah.
I was like, And Michael Porter Jr. was probably six. But in that example, really? There are some other guys. I mean, Ayton, I think, is more. He's probably more consistent than Michael Porter. I don't know. It's tough to say. They're very hard to compare. But also, some of the other guys that aren't in the top six are like Colin Sexton, Miles Bridges, Dante DiVincenzo, Kevin Huerter, and Grayson Allen. So it wasn't like a great class. But Jacob, you thinking? You didn't think I was good with the number six at Michael Porter?
Wait, we didn't mention Mikal Bridges yet.
I was about to say the same thing. Mikal Bridges is for sure that next guy for me.
Yeah, I think he's six also.
I missed him, so I take back what I said, and I will put Mikal Bridges there. That was user error.
Yeah, I think, honestly, I wouldn't even get upset if somebody really wanted to make a Michael Porter Jr. argument over Mikal Bridges. I think Mikal Bridges is, like, a much better defender, so I think he probably gets the nod in that regard. I think this one's pretty unimpeachable, right? Like, to your point, Ian, and if anybody wants to make a strong argument of Triple J over Trae Young, I think we'd be open to hearing it. But I think, Trae Young's already had more playoff success. He has the ability to score more points than Jaren Jackson Jr. just does, like, when you think about their pure offensive output. Brian hated my point. He just left the room. Kid duty, right? So I think when it comes to it, right, like, that's an unimpeachable top five, unless anybody disagrees.
I'd like to make an argument that Shea at number one, Luka at number two.
Whoa.
Do it.
Defense matters, and Shea's got lockdown potential. He's not a negative on defense, and we've all seen a million samples of Luka being an Olay defender. A negative defender, and I think at this point where they're currently at this season, I think Shea's having a better season. He's on a better team, similar numbers, and I'll always tip my cap to the defender, so I'm giving it to Shea.
I think it's a fair argument, except that they went head to head in the playoffs last year and Luka got the better of him, right? So, like, to me, the depleted Mavs getting that job done. Obviously,
PJ Washington. But the context, the context was around who do you want for the next 5 years, and so that's where I'm going.
Yeah, you also have to measure the contributions to date, right? As it relates to it. So,
yeah, you're right. Luka's had more playoff success at this point. I'm feeling an OKC championship, and I think there's something to be said for usage and just how often the ball sticks in your hand and flow of offense, and they play two very different styles. I feel like they're both putting up a ton of assists, but I feel like Shea allows his role players to be the best they can be while the Mavs offense is very Luka-centric.
I think it's a fair take. I think we'll that's one that, you know, we could probably go back and forth, but we'll see what the rest of it plays out. I did want to play a little fun game of here are some fun names taken in front of Jalen Brunson in the 2018 draft. We had Jacob Evans, Donza Musa, Omari Spellman, Javon Carter, Chandler Hutchinson, and Aaron Holiday at this exact same position. Really, to your point, Brian, up front, we just don't know how to draft. Don't know how to
evaluate. I do love Javon Carter, just for the record.
I mean, that's my spirit animal.
General managers and weathermen never have to get it right. 50-50.
Speaking of not getting it right, I will speak for 2 seconds in defense of DeAndre Ayton. Like, I actually really like him, and I think that it's not his fault that he was picked number one. It's not his fault that the Suns picked him over Luka or SGA or any of these other guys. He's been in a lousy environment his entire career. For him personally, not necessarily a losing team, obviously, but just not a good situation for him. And I think with a better reputation, we'd be thinking about him a lot like Al Jefferson. Like, everybody likes Al Jefferson. They have very, very similar statistical profiles, very similar players, and I could see Ayton just being like a successful, solid player for like 15 years. So,
how is Phoenix a bad situation for him?
I don't think he was ready for it. I'm saying that is his fault. Like, he wasn't didn't have the maturity to play with Chris Paul, I think, if I'm honest.
He's just not that guy. He's just more of a complimentary option.
Exactly, yeah. I'm not saying, like, he's innocent in all of this, but I think him getting picked one overall hurts his expectations, or, like, people have too high expectations, and then being slid in right next to Chris Paul, who, like, notoriously, like, works players really, really hard and has varying success in the regular season. Good for him. And, yeah, but I'm an Aiden believer.
I just would have liked to see him do something since those struggles, right? I hear you. I don't, day in, day out, I don't see the success that would even, catapult him into top six or seven in this conversation.
He's another guy who still could, though. Like, he doesn't need to develop any skills. Like, you could see him even in a couple of years going to, like, a decent playoff team, being a valuable starter on, like, a decent team. Like, that could still be in his future, so.
Yeah, and I mean, he's 25 years old.
Exactly.
My issue was it felt like an outdated decision even at the time. Like, the trajectory of the NBA was not to draft a guy whose best skill set is to sit on the block with his back to the basket.
Yeah.
Like, I think that's definitely the right pick in 2001, 2002, but this was 2018, and you're very much so looking for big wings who could facilitate, so, like, Luka was sitting there on a platter.
They drafted for fit, which you don't do with the first overall pick. Right? They had Devin Booker. They had Mikal Bridges at that point in time. They drafted for fit versus somebody that could potentially take him to the next level.
One thing, though, that makes him a little bit more modern is he's, like, a 76% free throw shooter, so he's not going to hurt you there. But, yeah.
And he's averaging about, career-wise, 17 points a game, 10.5 rebounds, and 1.6 assists. I mean, if you just look at that and separate from his number one draft pick, he's not a bad player, and he is only 25. I think it's too early to judge him in his career.
I think that's fair. Speaking of too early to judge, 2019 class, this is probably the guys that have the most to prove. The actual order, number one, Zion Williamson. Number two, Ja Morant. Number three, RJ Barrett. Number four, DeAndre Hunter. And number five, Darius Garland. I think there's a lot here. I think different people have different perspectives on what Zion has done and what his future still looks like. Obviously, Ja has had his kind of off-the-court issues and injury concerns, and, I think there is still a projection of what he could be. So, kind of with the first two really being up in the air, Brian, you want to take us through your five, and we can rip you apart as well?
I'd love that. No, I'm looking at my 19 list, and I'm looking, if you put these guys in, like, the 17 or 18 class, it would get real interesting. But I think given how weak the draft class is in 19, for me, it's kind of a I think the top five are pretty locked in. It's Ja, Zion, Garland, Hero, Kobe. That's the order. Let's move on.
You would say, first off, I can't. So, real quick, I'm going to make the case that Zion shouldn't be in the top three of this draft. So far in his career, he's played 24 games, 61 games, 0 games, 29 games, 76 games, and only 6 so far this year, and he was said to be, his return is indefinite, right? His absence is indefinite. We don't know when he's back. It's not like he's dealing with, like, injuries that should keep you out that long. These are soft tissue injuries that there should be a known recovery path, and you do the rehab, you put in the time, and you move forward. And he's had significant reoccurring soft tissue injuries. I have said this from day one. You all know this. I feel strongly about this. I think he's a generational bust. I don't think a man's body is supposed to look like that and move the way his does, and I don't think it'll ever get back to the athlete he was at Duke, where he was flying all over the course, blocking three-point shots. I don't even know if he gets back to half of that. And without that athleticism, he doesn't have a skill set to continue to distinguish himself. So I'm actually taking Ja number one, Darius Garland number two, Tyler Hero number three, and I would put Zion at four, simply because I can't put him over guys like, you know, P.J. Washington, or I can't put guys like P.J. Washington or even R.J. Barrett over him. I think R.J. Barrett is probably right there as well, but you know, I really think that those three guys are going to have had already more productive NBA careers, and will continue to have more productive NBA careers, removing all the pedigree aside.
Yeah, I had the same order as you, Jacob. I had Zion fourth behind those guys. And I thought about it kind of like this. Like, if you were to go back in time and talk to those GMs and say, this is what you're getting out of these four guys, I think that's the order. Like, who wants to continue to draft, like, a 26-year-old on – or 25-year-old, whatever – on that promise when it hasn't been there in 5+ years? Like, that's just not gonna happen. That's not a winning proposition. So I think Ja Morant definitely number one, and then Garland and Hero 2, 3, Zion 4 because of that. I mean, at some point you got to give up on the dream. So
just to defend myself for 1 second, I think you don't win in the NBA come playoff time without top end talent. And like, I love me some Hero, I love me some Garland, but I guess Tyler Hero could win you a playoff game here or there. But like, a healthy Zion, you throw a percentage on it. You think there's a 1% chance, a 5% chance, a 10% chance. Zion Williamson, when ticking right, can be the best player on a really good playoff team. Like, he's that good. Jacob, you're describing his athleticism. Like, there's literally no one who can guard him. We're talking about Bam. Like, Bam's not guarding him. Like, so I don't disagree with what you guys are saying per se, but I think if I'm trying to win a championship, I'm rolling the dice on Zion over Hero, over Garland, over White, because he could be the best player on a good playoff team. So that I don't really disagree, but that's just my take.
I think I completely agree with that. I think the part that I struggle with is it paralyzes your organization, because there's no world where he's a role player, right? He is either the guy right. that you described, which was the guy in the
playoff game last year,
which
yeah.
is unbelievably exciting, or you're building around a fantasy, right? And like, the Pelicans, their talent is fun, but without Zion, like, they don't have an identity, right? They have a collection of guys that are okay 3-and-D guys that, but like, they don't have a center, right? Point said Zion was going to be their center, and they were going to play a small ball brand of basketball, and they're like organizationally depleted as a result. So like, that's the trade-off.
No, I think that's right,
because you can't. Yeah. He's never going to be a role player.
But like, think about that Pelicans team if they were all healthy, all going right. Like, they would be a championship contender. Like, that would be fun to watch.
I wake up. What if I was 6'3" every day? Like, it'd be life would be fucking incredible. I'd just play basketball every day. I'd be so happy. Wouldn't need
anything. I'd take that. I would rather be 6'3" than have a healthy New Orleans Pelicans team. I'm with you there.
That's fair.
I'll take that.
That's
fair. I'm 6 foot for the record for all the listeners.
Yeah. Wait, we also think, first of all, I'm really sad because watching Zion in college was like, he was one of the most exciting players I've ever seen, ever. Oh, it really makes me sad. But do we think that Kobe is like 100% picked over RJ Barrett? Because all you guys were like, oh yeah, this is the order, and I'm like, but RJ, I mean, I guess he's narrow in his skill set. I mean, you know he's going to drive left, and you know he's going to go crazy to the rim. Now that I'm talking about it, maybe I do like Kobe better, but is it 100 times out of 100 times you pick Kobe?
That's over a fair question, for sure. He's having a good year.
Mm-hmm. I'm taking RJ 5. I think he's shown that given a little bit more of the room, his day-to-day upside is much higher than Kobe's. I'm not a Kobe White guy in general. I think he is a point guard that can't dribble, which is never a good thing. I don't think he's meant to be a two guard. I don't think he's big enough, and I don't think he has off the ball creation ability. So for me, I think he's the fact that the other guys that we're talking about are PJ Washington, Cam Johnson, and Jordan Poole. Considering the rest of the lottery here was Jared Culver, Jackson Hayes, Rui Hachimura, Cam Reddish, and Romeo Langford.
Like, I think it's more of a response to the draft just being dog shit than it is Kobe White being good.
Can I make the case for two undrafted free agents from this class, Naz Reid and Max Strus?
Oh.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, Naz Reid's a legit NBA player, and Max Strus is starting on the best team in the league. So, I think both those guys I would take over RJ Barrett.
Wait, I'm pretty sure Alex said
I'm just saying that to make Jacob mad. I know he loves RJ Barrett. Time,
just for the record, Ian.
Confirmed.
I think my general take on RJ Barrett is I'm fine if those guys are over him. I think when we look back, and my stance at the draft was that he was going to have a better, longer career than Zion. And I think right now that's kind of positioned to be the case.
Yeah, so is Michael Malvin.
That's true. I'm a good pickup basketball player.
We got to bring in a short-time listener, long-time friend, Connor Friedman, to confirm your comments on RJ Barrett, because he's got it written down, but there was something about him being Kevin Durant. I can't confirm.
Yeah, that's made up. We're going to move on.
No. I remember you said that he was going to be a better long-term player than Zion, for sure, and I feel like you also said Ja, but definitely Zion.
Yeah. Yeah, I think my stance at the time, which I was wrong on, was that he would be in the Kevin Durant prototype, which I think he was a little bit over my skis. I think he has definitely not been a Kevin Durant top 20 player of all time prototype. So maybe just to close it out, right? Maybe we do this. How long would you go in a draft of 27, 18, and 19 before you took anybody from 2019, right? So I think that's the best barometer for this. I think we're safe to say SGA or Tatum, SGA, Luka, Donovan Mitchell.
Brunson.
Oh, yeah, Brunson too.
Brunson. And then I think it gets maybe interesting at that point. Are we taking Ja over Trey?
Yes.
Yeah. I would probably take, this is nitpicking, but I'd probably take Brunson over Mitchell, and I would consider Ja and Mitchell like kind of neck and neck.
Yeah, I think that's the right place. I actually think Trey belongs in that conversation. As we'll get to here in a second, but I think that's fair, and then I think we go a long way without 2019 guys again. So, you know, we probably could have given Darius Garland some more flowers in this. I think he's still in a prove it mentality this year with the Cavs as well. I think him and Ja, are young enough in that 2019 draft that may shift right as the next couple of seasons go on. But I think it was a productive little exercise to see how hard drafting is.
We got to get Zion out of New Orleans. He's got a beignet and a crawfish issue. Should the joints can only take so much.
Question: if the Bulls were looking to acquire Zion, would we pro or against? You pro? I'd be pro.
The Bulls do anything.
See?
Literally, what do we have to lose?
Now we're back.
I was about to say, I can't. Anything. And then I'd be able to maybe watch the games at one point.
I'm just going to repeat this. The Bulls drafted Justin Patton in the 2017 NBA draft.
That's hard to pause.
Okay, thanks, Brian.
That's true.
I'd love to run into Zion at like a small Cheval, just eating a triple burger, make some eye contact.
In this next segment, nobody's going to defend Zion, that's for sure. But, you know, we wanted to kind of give ourselves a little bit of a challenge here and take a player that we've been critical on, either on the podcast or off, and put on a little bit of our suit and tie, go to court and be their defense attorney and mount a defense of why they are actually, in fact, you know, either underrated, productive, thought of too lowly, right, in the media space. So we have two members of our tribunal here today that are going to hear our proceedings. We got Alex and Brian who are going to kind of rate our case and see if we can convince anybody that, you know, maybe we are, in fact, on the. So I think the three defendants that we have on the stand are James Harden, Zach LaVine, and Trey Young. And if I look at the docket, I believe we're going to have Zach LaVine up first. So, Mr. Melvin, can you please step to the court and defend your client?
I shall, and I've actually watched at least 6 seasons of Suits, so I feel like I'm adequately prepared to do so. Quick sidebar, because we were talking about predictions.
Sidebar, yeah, that's excellent. Nice job, Michael.
Thank you.
Stop it, Harvey Specter. Stop it.
And this sidebar has nothing to do with my case, so it may not be a Harvey Specter situation. But we were talking about predictions, and I had a great prediction I would like to pat myself on the back here and tell you guys about. I said that Michael Connelly was going to have a longer career and a better career than Greg Oden when I saw him play John Shire in high school against the best Ohio State team, or Ohio team. So it proved to be correct. So, Jacob, maybe you have a chance in 8 years when we're still doing this podcast. So, back to Harvey Specter, Melvin. So the elephant in the room is, and it's hard to separate, and I guess that's what I'm going to try to do here, the massive 5-year, $215 million max contract that Zach LaVine signed in 2022. But to put that in perspective, that puts him as the 18th highest paid player for the 2024-2025 season, behind guys like Curry, Embiid, Jokic, Butler, Giannis, Dame, guys like that. He is in a similar bracket, again, just based on salary, to Trae Young, Fred VanVleet, Lowry Markkanen, Ant, Siakam, Sabonis, Ben Simmons, well, that's tough, Ja, Darius Garland, and Zion. So when I first, just based on those, I don't think he's out of place in the similar pay brackets to a lot of those guys. So that's first. The contract is, I wouldn't say it's a great contract. No one wants to trade for him. It puts the Bulls in a bad situation. I recognize that. So moving on from the contract, statistics. Since 2018, he's averaged about 24 points a game, 4 assists, and 5 rebounds a game, and his career best in 2021 with 27, 4 points per game, 5 assists, and 5 rebounds. I mean, basically 27.5 points a game, 5 and 5. That's a, if you just look at it on paper, that is a max guy. Again, there's a lot of other things that goes into it, but he those stats are not bad. And he's not out of lockstep with those other guys that I mentioned in his similar group. The main issue, as I mentioned, is the expectations, which, again, is contrary. So the case against him, because I want to go on both sides a little bit, he's not a number one guy in a championship team. I do not believe that. But I believe he can be a very capable, pure scorer shooting guard on a championship team with a solid bench and a good defense around him. I think he's more to me like a $30 million guy, a year player, like a Hartenstein, Middleton. I mean, right now, Emmanuel Quickly is getting paid that much. DeAndre Ayton, Tyler Hero. I mean, that if you pay him that much, I think he's better than a lot of those guys, and if not on the same level. So, situations. He's been in losing organizations his entire career. The first 3 years in Minnesota, I think they went 31-51 the first year. That's, you know, people talk about putting empty stats up in bad organizations, but what else is the guy supposed to do? I mean, he's doing all that he can on bad situations. And then his seventh year in Chicago, which, as a Bulls fan, we all know the misery that has happened in the past 7 years. So he hasn't been in great situations. He's been asked to lead a Bulls team as a number one guy. And he's done a pretty solid job, but he also had DeMar DeRozan. And putting DeMar with Zach, they don't fit well together. And I love both of those guys as individual players. My next three ones, demeanor. He does seem like a good teammate, both in and out of the locker room. You never really hear anything bad about him. His teammates seem to like him. He doesn't say anything bad to the media. Doesn't get that many technicals. Yeah, he probably could have a better shot selection. But that the way he plays as a shooting guard in his position, I've seen Donovan Mitchell take shots. I'm like, what are you doing? So I think it's just part of the position that he's in. And then you guys know my favorite way to judge a player is the eye test. And this dude is a pure basketball player. His athleticism is top-notch. We know that from the dunk contest, the greatest dunk contest ever. He's a smooth basketball player. He gets to his spots. His shot is so pure and fun to watch. His ability to get to the rim, he's got a quick first step, shooting touch. I think he's an incredible offensive player that draws a huge amount of attention from the defense. And on my last point, speaking of defense, no, he's not great, but he's definitely improved, and he is capable, and I think he can give – if he gives effort on a nightly basis, he's not a negative. Alex, to your point about Luka versus, you know, SGA, I don't think that – I think SGA is way better of a defender, but I don't think Zach's a complete liability. So I think given a little slight change in contract to that $30 million a year range, his positives outweigh the negative. He's paid like a top 20 guy, should be in a more in the 40 range, but again, you're still going to be a number one or a number two guy in that 40 range. So I think the biggest knock is the contract. And I rest my case, and I will take any follow-up questions.
I think you actually did a pretty good job there. I think your first point is pretty effective because we all just spend a lot of time shitting on Zach LaVine. But then when you throw out some of those names, like I thought Tyler Hero was a good one. I'm like, what's the difference between Zach LaVine and Tyler Hero? I'm like, those are pretty similar players. So although, like you're saying, the contract, you know, not what we want it to be, maybe it's not as outlandish as we think. Maybe another guy like Ian was saying with DeAndre Ayton, just someone who's put in a position they shouldn't be in. So actually, I'm buying it. I'm buying the argument.
Yeah, it's a good argument. I think it's a manner of expectations, and when you're getting paid like that, and you're the number one or number two guy on a team, expectations are high. My big issues with LaVine are defense. I think a guy who's that athletic and that gifted should be a lockdown defender, and the fact that he's not is it's got to be an attention to detail type of thing, because he has every ability needed to be a lockdown defender. And then just the eye test when you're watching Bulls games in the fourth quarter, like when we had DeRozan, we were in good hands with LaVine. It's heavy turnovers, low percentage shots, and that's kind of what I think separates him from being a two or a three on a winning team versus a number one.
But then it's interesting if you put him on Miami, for example. You have a healthy Jimmy Butler, let's say you have a Bam, and then you slide him in on that team as a team that needs a scoring punch. He can man the offense as a number one for short stretches. Like you said, not in clutch time. I totally agree. But just to carry a team in the mid-second quarter for 4 minutes. So I think it is about that fit, but I totally agree. He's not clutch. Defense leaves us wanting more. Contract is what it is. But I think that's a pretty good argument.
Yeah, I didn't want to mention the I would much rather have DeMar take that last shot. I didn't think it was going to help my argument, but I agree with you guys. I win those games. I'm like, DeMar, get the ball, you know?
Well, so. I think it's time to call up our next defendant, because, you know, this is someone who also needs to be defended from a lack of clutch performance in the playoffs. And that's Mr. James Harden. So, Counselor Katz, if you could come to the stand and, you know, state your case.
Your Honors, my client, James Harden, will be exercising his Fifth Amendment right to not request a trade for the duration of the trial. Additionally, as you know, my client has spent all of his money at the club, and therefore I'm the court-appointed public defender.
He's for sure eating at the buffet. Like, he is buffeting hard.
Because Harden, of these constraints, my arguments will be limited to the eye test and various statistical analyses that don't make any sense together. Now, I didn't get to watch a lot of basketball over the last week, if I'm honest. Holidays, travel, etc. But I did watch the entire Clippers-Nuggets game last night, and that's why I volunteered to be James's public defender here today. He looks amazing. Frankly, the game looks like it's just slowing down for him in a way that I haven't seen in a really long time. He looks like a combination of like the old James Harden without a lot of the explosiveness, but he also looks a little like Jokic. Like, the game is so slow. He doesn't look like an amazing athlete. He's seeing the floor. The two-man game with him and Zubac is like out of control. It's like extremely fun to watch. You know, I mentioned at the onset of my argument that there would be very little defense here. There's also going to be a lot of, or should I say, a lack of defense in my argument about James's defense, because it doesn't exist. But offensively, he just looks really good. And the game's moving at a pace for him that I think really benefits his game. And so I know we're not going to win this case, guys. I know that. So what I want to do is I want to propose conditions of James's bail. All right? You're going to let him out on bond, and here are a few conditions. In games that the Clippers are winning this season, okay, James is taking a lot more of his made field goals from two instead of three. All right? A condition of his bond is that he's going to lay off all the three-pointers, and he's going to try to get back to his roots at driving to the rim, because I think that's a winning form of basketball for James. Okay? Additionally, you're going to require James to create his own shot a little bit more. Okay? Last season, he was holding onto the ball for at least 7 seconds during his possessions. For a lot of players in the NBA, that's disgusting. We don't want that. But for James, it really works, and it worked for him last season. We're going to get him back into form for this season, and ipso facto, sidebar, the defense rests.
Tribunal, how do we find?
Yeah, I mean, James Harden is just like hot trash, but I appreciate the attempt. I mean, I think... You know, seeing James Harden as the one on a team, I think he still, like, has some value, but, like, that team's never going to be good. He's shooting, like, 17% from the field. I don't think he gets off the ground any more than Jokic, but I hear what you're saying. Like, he's still an elite distributor. He can still play the two-man game. He looks good on the basketball court. He also looks good in a bathing suit, so, you know. I'm buying it.
Yeah, listen, it's hard to argue with. It's hard to argue a case when they've already admitted they're guilty. But I will say, if I'm a center, James Harden's high on my list of point guards I want to play with. Him and Zubac have a nice connection going on. He's having a big year, and he stays relatively healthy. So that's all I got. I don't know. I wouldn't want him on my team.
Thank you, Your Honors.
Speaking of point guards that you know, centers like to play with, next defendant is Trae Young, gonna take off my hat and put on my robe or my suit and hit the court and defend him myself. And our defense today is that he's wrongly accused. He actually shouldn't be on trial. It's actually DeJounte Murray that should be on trial here, and I just want to just quickly transport us all back to 2021. Eastern Conference semifinals. 7-game battle against Joel Embiid and the 76ers. My client averaged 29 points a game, 11 assists, and took them to a 7-game series win over the 76ers. We were playing a great style of basketball. Clint Capella, Trae Young pick and roll was one of the more dominant plays in all of the NBA on a points per possession. Had shooters around, clutch shooting from Bogey. DeAndre Hunter is an up and comer. And, you know, we were going to win that series against the Bucks. It was 2-2. And, you know, game three got hurt. Tried to gut it out in game four. You know, I had 48 points. My client, excuse me, had 48 points, 11 assists, and 7 rebounds in a game one win. And came back and had 15 in game two and 35 in another win in game three. And, you know, really was on path to have a finals run. And got hurt, unfortunately lost games 5 and 6 as a result, and we know how that story played out. Management made a terrible decision, and, you know, brought in that bum DeJounte Murray and just threw off our entire chemistry. There was no flow to our offense. Very confused to responsibilities, primary ball dominator, and my client will be the first to admit the he goes, I go, show did not work. I'm asking you to understand that my persona as a lead guard was one of distribution and actual flow and a mindset of team first basketball that I helped attribute. And I've gotten back to that this year, or my client, excuse me, has gotten back to that this year. He is averaging 12.1 assists per game, which is a career high. Usage rate is down to 27.1, which is the lowest in his entirety of his career. It was 28.3 rookie year. Other than that, 34.8, 32.9, 34.4, 32.4, and 30.4. Getting off the ball more. The Hawks are better this year. They just beat the Cavs in back-to-back games and also clinched their NBA Cup group, including a win over the Celtics. This has gone directly in line with the development of other players and getting teammates involved and getting Jalen Johnson involved, getting Dyson Daniels involved. The best year, again, by far, for previously discussed DeAndre Hunter, and creating an offense that he is actually the engine of again. And it's player movement, ball movement together, because there's not two players where the ball sticks, but one primary creator and everybody understanding the role around him. So I think the reality is that the guilty party here is not Trae Young. He is still a top five point guard in the league. You can still make a deep conference run, potentially even a finals run with the right players around him. And he should be reinstilled as a primary face of the NBA type player. I will let you all respond to my case now.
Same. Yeah, it was a good argument. A couple thoughts. One, I think the Eastern Conference final run is a little bit of a... The Milwaukee series is tough to analyze because Giannis didn't play like the first four or five games, which makes a huge difference. But you play who you're playing against, so it is what it is. Yeah, I love him as a table setter. I think he has a lot of attributes similar to Steve Nash back in his day, and Steve Nash did not have the reputation Trae Young has. So I think as long as Trae Young is avoiding chucking up Steph Curry like three-pointers and focuses on pick and roll, distributing, breaking down a defense, I think he's great. I think the defense is a huge issue because, especially playoff basketball, you see it nonstop. They're just targeting the worst defender, and he's not just a bad defender, he's absolutely horrible. So if they're running pick and roll at him every single possession, it makes it very difficult to keep him on the court. And then my final point is, and I think this is just culturally speaking on the Below the Rim podcast, I think anytime we break out a ranking in conversation, we're going to have to list them off. So if you're going to say top five for Trae Young, top five point guard, I need to hear the top five.
All right, I'll hit you with it. I mean, we got Stotts and SGA. Those are my one and two. I'm just going to make sure that I go through this in the right way. Stotts and SGA are one and two.
Luka?
I think we probably... No, Luka's a wing, in my opinion. Not He dominates the ball, but he's a wing. They play.
We have to argue about that, but keep going. Keep going.
So then you probably have Jalen Brunson. You will then have, I would say, Darius Garland, and then I would put Trae Young at five, and then I would say Ja and Halliburton are right after him. Actually, probably in that order.
You're not even considering Dame in there either?
Or James Harden?
No. No, absolutely not on either of them. Dame's washed, Harden's washed.
Okay. I mean, LaMelo?
LaMelo's probably, I would put right with Tyrese Halliburton. You can make an argument LaMelo over Tyrese Halliburton.
I'd grab De'Aaron Fox over Trey, and I think it's hard to argue. It's hard to argue that Luka's not a point guard. Like, he does all the things.
Listen, I didn't have Luka in there. If you, I would say top six if you wanted to say Luka. Fine going to bat an argument of any of those guys of De'Aaron Fox, LaMelo, Tyrese Halliburton, Ja. I think Trey's right now a better player than those guys. And this is coming from somebody that really struggled with Trae Young, but just like retrospectively, if you truly took away the last 2 years with DeJounte Murray and just said like that's a failed experiment, the body of work is pretty awesome.
Yeah, I like the point about hierarchy. It's a lot easier for a team to function when you just know all the time who your guy is, which I think is when you watch OKC play, that seems to be how they function. Like, it's very clear SGA is the guy they go through and everyone eats off him.
Yeah. Just right off his belly. Well, listen, I know we were all excited to hear from Ian and Brian. If it's okay by you guys, let's maybe table those kind of riveting takes until the next edition of Below the Rim. I think we really got into the draft and want to make sure we give everybody's professional opinion some time to breathe. So I think we'll wrap that up. Kind of NBA Cup final round or final group stage games tomorrow. So some fun games with some implications. Excited for those. Nice Bulls win tonight over a very, very shorthanded Nets team. So nice to see them get the job done. And looking forward to kind of continuing the dialogue on next week's Below the Rim podcast. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Had a blast tonight. Are you serious? I was about to say, what are we doing? What? Man. I agree. That's insane. What is that? Is that a 2000% in whatever the... Oh, I don't know. Dang. That was an eco. Wow. Well, hot dog.